Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the January 24, 2016 session, focusing on Luke chapter 4, verses 14 through 21, Hometown Boy. I'm David Cassidy, and I'm joined for this episode by our good friends Nikki Hardiman, Daniel Glaze, and Bert Montgomery. How's everybody doing in this new year?
Doing good.
Pretty good.
It's been good so far.
All right. Well, Daniel, now, how many years have you been pastor?
I've been pastor 9 years. 9 years and some change.
All right. Well, I would imagine you've got a particularly interesting take on today's passage. So would you mind giving us a look at it?
I do. And I hope some good stories will unfold throughout our conversation tonight. Well, I'll actually start with a little story. It's actually not when I was a preacher, but when I was in seminary in Richmond, one afternoon, some buddies of mine and I piled into a car and drove up to Washington, D.C., just a little ways away from Richmond, to hear a speech by His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, at National Cathedral. And we went in, we found our seats, and there was a lot of buzz. But I noticed when the Dalai Lama stood up to speak, everyone in the room just became quiet, very peaceful, serene. Not so with this first sermon from Jesus. It looks like things were going just fine in Nazareth until Jesus shows up, opens his mouth, and all you know what broke loose. But we'll get to that part of the story next week. Here's the situation for today. Jesus is invited to his hometown synagogue to be the guest preacher for the Sabbath service. Some folks in the congregation, they took out the large scroll and they unrolled it to the assigned reading for the day. Jesus, the hometown boy, rose and read the text. It was from Isaiah. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll and sat down. Now, when preachers today sit down, that means they're done. But in Jesus' day, you sat down to preach. So when the text says Jesus sat down, in my version, that means he's about to get started. So Jesus proclaims, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." In other words, Jesus says, "This scripture from Isaiah, that's me. That's what I'm about. That's what my ministry is about." Oh, how nice, we say. He's about to bring some good news to the poor and restore sight to the blind. Those are such nice things. What I don't think we fully grasp, I don't at least, is what a subversive word this is. These words from Isaiah speak of a world, I think, that's just turned upside down. See, in Isaiah's day, only the king was anointed. You didn't anoint preachers. And why would you preach good news to the poor? They're just cheap labor. Why would you release captives? Didn't you capture them for a reason? Letting the oppressed go free? This is crazy. What Jesus is talking about is turning the world upside down. And thank God that's exactly what he did. Jesus came to show us in no uncertain terms that God works differently than the way the world works. Think about epiphany. Think about manifestation. Think about new light. Jesus came to show us more of the new light of the way God works. God cares for the poor and wants to lift them up. Women and children, they are not to be dismissed. They're of equal value in God's eyes. And if we want to get to heaven, we better listen to them, Jesus says. Now, this is a tough message. It was a tough message to hear that day in Nazareth, and it's a tough message to hear today. But if we want to follow Jesus, listeners, bringing good news to the poor, releasing the captives, giving sight to the blind, that must be our ministry as well. That's a little background on today's text.
What I liked about what you just said, I mean, it was really bringing home, you know, I mean, what he was preaching was pretty radical stuff. We get used to hearing these things over and over, and they lose their emphasis sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I think that the casual nature we bring to the text of Jesus, you know, perhaps was the same casual nature his hearers had about the Isaiah reading. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
he was being subversive in it, and so we need to. I don't know. We need to peel that back a little bit.
Yeah, no, because I was thinking just what you said, Daniel, that I wonder if the hearers of Jesus had gotten used to this beautiful passage from Isaiah.
Yeah.
And that it lost its application until he says, okay, now. Now this is being fulfilled, and I'm the messenger that's doing this. Like, oh, no. As long as we can keep it as this nice heavenly message, kind of the way we think about the Beatitudes, you know, as long as we can think it some beautiful thing that's separate from us, but when we bring it down to here, that's when it gets dangerous. Mm-hmm. And you're saying we have to act on it. I have to think they heard that the same way, because they would have been familiar with this passage from Isaiah, I think. And it's a common theme through many of the different prophets. It almost echoes, so it's not something they wouldn't have heard before.
Mm-hmm. Bert, I think that's exactly right. I think part of why I wanted to bring part of that up in my Bible background is that we've become a little too casual, I think. Well, with this text, but with a lot of Jesus texts, and it loses its punch to the gut, so to speak. When we hear them, because we're so familiar with them, we've heard a lot of these very difficult subversive texts, turn the other cheek, yeah, you know, we've heard it 100 times. And so when Jesus says this text from Isaiah that you think you know so well, let me bring it home to you. This is really what God is about, and this is what I'm about. And he's revealing more of himself in that way. And yeah, as we'll talk about next week, it got him into a lot of hot water. And so, you know, his hearers, this probably didn't sit too well.
When I think of this text, I think about, actually end up thinking about my ordination council. So I was wonderfully blessed to receive ordination from a church that I served straight out of seminary. And as we often do, we get to invite people from our past to come back for the council, in which we get to kind of talk about how we see our call to follow Christ and to be a minister of the gospel. And so I invited my youth minister to come and participate in my ordination council. And it was wonderful. He came, he asked some great questions, and it was a wonderful time. And I really enjoyed the process and being able to articulate, you know, how I saw my call to ministry. So apparently he went home and he was talking to my mom about this experience. And he said to her, he said, "Nikki's grown up a lot. She thinks before she speaks now." and it's true. I mean, I don't always think before I speak, and it can often get me in trouble. But when it feels important, I do now think before I speak, and I didn't used to. And so I think about how these people watch Jesus grow up. And sure, we have this we know Jesus is God's son. And so we kind of assume that his childhood was pretty easy, but I just can't imagine that it was. I think that watching him grow up, you know, they saw him be a kid. They saw him learn to walk. They saw him splash in puddles. They saw him tease with his brothers and sisters. They saw him come of age. And, you know, a lot of those people in today's time could probably say, "I changed your diapers."
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I love this because Jesus does get to come home. And I think that the people were probably expecting the Jesus as a kid, mm-hmm. you know, the one who's, in my case, speaks before she thinks. And I think it was probably pretty surprising that he had such a presence and that he had come into his own. And it's one of those places where we see Jesus has grown in wisdom and stature, as the text tells us that he does. And so I think that probably part of what was so surprising is they were expecting a nice little sermon from Jesus of Nazareth, who they watched grow up. But that is not what they got. They got something much more powerful and much more challenging.
Yeah,
and it's hard to hear a challenge from somebody who you changed their diapers.
Yeah. you know, I always think of in the churches in the church I grew up in, and I don't know if we still do this, but I guess some of the bigger churches do. You have a youth Sunday, and you know, there'd be the kids who have grown up, like you said, who are born in the church, who've grown up in the church, and then you've got she's now 17 years old, and she gets to preach, and everybody's so excited, you know, because you've got new kids reading scripture and leading hymns, and now this person that we've watched is going to preach a good sermon to us. And no matter what they say, it's a beautiful sermon, right? I mean, it's just because you're so filled with pride, and you're pleased that they want to preach and that they're going to be in the pulpit, you know, when they could be out on the streets and having nothing to do with the church. So all of this pride and all of this joy and paternalistic kind of thing is just surrounding you. I kind of think about that, like you're saying with Jesus, the things that we do with our kids when they grow up and as they come back and begin reading scripture in church, and say, wow, they turned out really good. You know, I think those emotions are there. And it's something that we've all experienced, either that we've put on to people we've watched growing up and doing this, or some of us have experienced that, you know, ourselves. Nikki, like you with your ordination, you know, I grew up and it's sort of like it wasn't a surprise that I ended up in ministry to many people, including in my family and in my church.
Oh, it was a big surprise, I think, to most of the people I grew up with.
So, but at the same time, that's, you know, when you get older, it's sort of like, yeah, but I'm not a cute little minister. You know, I'm not that kid that, you know, it's sort of like trying to make that break of having something biblical to say that may not go over very well to the people that raised you who aren't being very biblical. Including ourselves.
Well, I think it's interesting you brought up the youth Sunday thing, because the youth that I have worked with, they could absolutely preach a sermon that would not be okay.
Hmm.
I mean, there are things that our youth are challenging us as churches to pay attention to. And if they got up and said what they really thought and not what they had been coached to say to keep it safe, I imagine the reaction would be, now we aren't going to throw our youth off a cliff, but we're going to go into business meeting and get mad at the pastor about it.
Yeah. We'll figuratively throw them off the cliff.
Right.
That's for sure.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. We'll ostracize them. And maybe that's a role Jesus was playing.
Yeah.
And next year you don't let the youth preach. You have the youth minister preach.
That's right. That's right.
That's a whole lot safer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It brings up in my mind two very interesting points. At the same time, we both love to hear from someone among us.
Mm-hmm.
It's nostalgic. It's one of our own. So much pride and joy. Yet if they stick a toe over the line, it gets to us that much more. I don't know. It's something about being this, you know, what is it? It's you can never go home again. I mean, for Jesus, maybe that was true. It's really hard to be the person he knew he was called to be among those who knew him best. I'm sure that was incredibly difficult. I remember, it's been years ago, but I was working in a church when I was younger, and then had opportunity to interview for a position at that church. I remember when I sent, as is customary, when pastors are doing some interviewing, to send some videos of myself preaching. And one of the comments I got from someone on the committee who had known me very well. I had worked there earlier in ministry. Comment was, you look so grown up. And it was, I thought, well, it's because I am. You know, they still saw me, and who knows, maybe why I didn't get the job. They still saw me as the little kid I was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm grateful that, you know, the church I'm in now took a chance on me anyway, but things worked out. But with that church, that was difficult. Now this is my interpretation of it, but being seen as something other than just the hometown boy.
Do you think that when you're at this home church that it would be difficult for some of them to hear whatever it is you had to bring simply because all they could see was little Daniel?
I don't know. That comment made it feel like that. It made me feel like folks had not distinguished between the minister I was as a student and, mm-hmm. and growing and learning with, you know, someone who had done study and preparation and was ready.
Sure.
And so that's where I think the difficulty was. But I think it was also the familiarity. I don't know why it's the case, but I'd prefer to, I don't know. I was going to say something about if someone's going to hurt me, I'd much rather it be a total stranger than someone I love.
Sure.
And someone who's close to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's at play here or not, but you know, Nikki, this may be neither here nor there, but you mentioned, folks probably started looking at themselves. Wait a minute, is this Joe and Mary's boy? Mm-hmm. You know, we changed his diaper stuff. Do you think? I mean, were Mary and Joseph there that day?
I don't know.
Were they proud?
Well, Mary probably wasn't.
Maybe?
I mean, Mary would have been out in the. The synagogue, she may have been in there, but it would have been divided.
Well, right. But I guess I was getting at is would they have had that pride, or would people have started looking over at him? You know, Mary, what's he
That's
saying?
A good question. I don't know.
What y'all talk about at the dinner table? You know, that kind of stuff. Again, maybe neither here nor there, but when you start talking about that, that's where my mind went. Well, were his folks sitting there that day? And were they offended, or did they know this is what he's about?
Well, I mean, and I said this is in the lesson, the faith element lesson, but I really find a connection between what Jesus says here, what he latches onto, and Mary's Magnificat.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
I mean the themes are the same, mm-hmm. and you know, Mary, I don't know that Mary saw everything that was coming, but in order to say yes to carry Jesus, she had to have a wide imagination of possibilities, what could be possible. And so, I don't know, I think Mary got it. Joseph, I don't know that we know, but except that Joseph took a huge risk too. So I think Joseph had to have a really big imagination in order to kind of face the potential ridicule of not divorcing or not sending Mary away. I mean, there was so much tied up in that family. I mean, they had probably been the talk of the town anyway.
I was just thinking, for most of their
life. And, that's Mary and Joseph. Well, at least it's Mary's boy. We don't really think it's Joseph's boy. And so, you know, I mean, there was definitely stuff going on like that for them, I imagine.
Yeah. Well, all right. Not to change the subject on us, but, I would imagine a good number of our listeners are not ministers or preachers, but some of us are who are on this podcast. Do you guys ever envy folks, other preachers, maybe they're interim pastors or whether they're guest preachers or whatever, who are able to preach with the kind of honesty and a let them have it-ness, to coin a word, that Jesus does here?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's usually the role I play, so no.
Well, then let me say, Nikki, I envy you.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Because, you know, when I'm there are times when I'm writing and I think this is a tough lesson, but this is something we need to hear. I think, yeah, but deacon's meeting's in a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
And I often say, you know, my contract as a pastor runs from deacon's meeting to deacon's meeting. So, you know, you got to watch what you say. But, I joke about that, but
it's very true.
These are the folks who, let me say, my church gives me a lot of freedom and it's very supportive, but they also put food on my table.
Mm-hmm.
I can be as prophetic as I want to be, but I do need to support my family. And And that's, I wish it weren't that way. But, you know, do I self-censor sometimes because of that? Probably so.
And I don't know that I think that's wrong. And the reason is because it's two different roles. The person who comes in can be prophetic because they're not pastoring these people. But pastoring is different. It understands that, I think pastoring understands that the learning process isn't kind of like a bada bing, bada done. You know, it's a longer process that takes a while, and it takes nurture and gentleness. And so I think that you have to have both. You've got to have the pastor who is going to think before they speak, who's going to say, how can I best let this message be heard, understanding that I've got a long time to teach these lessons.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's something that's been very difficult for me, because I've always wanted to be just out there. My heroes have been Will Campbell and Tony Campolo and Merton, who just say whatever. And I remember talking with my friend, my mentor and pastor at the time, Dr. Mike Smith, who's now in Knoxville, Tennessee. At the time, he was my pastor in Memphis. And I was telling him how he's one of my favorite preachers. And at the same time, I really like Tony Campolo, who just goes in and just blasts everybody and says what he wants to say and then walks out and leaves everybody angry and having to wrestle with it. And he said, well, and this is what you were saying, Nikki, that they're doing two necessary things. Campolo comes around and screams and yells and shows everybody what's on the other side of the corner that they can't see. And I'm trying to get him to inch up and just barely, just have a courage just to take a peek around that corner just a little bit, you know? And so this difference roles is very, it's very real. And it's very difficult, especially for people like me who just want to be out there causing trouble, when you've got to be, you know, really with a group of people. And, you know, one of my seminary professors, a good friend of ours, David Cassidy's and mine, David Adams, used to really talk about this with us in Christian education and stuff, the role of the outside prophet. And that was his, I don't know, he probably grabbed that term from someone else, but don't be afraid to use outside prophets. Means, you know, you be careful what you say when you're on staff as a pastor, but know who you could bring in and to come in and let them say things and blow everything up and get everybody mad and then leave. And then you get to help everybody process with this and work. Yeah, but you know, what if what they're saying is real? What if we hear what he's saying? And, you know, and so I think that's very important. So I've always had this idea from seminary with David Adams with bringing in somebody else to come in and kind of throw a bomb and blow everything up. And then I'm stuck there and I get to help them clean up and make sense of it. I'm not the one who's going to get in trouble for messing everything up. So I think that's a different way to look at these two different roles. But doggone it, Daniel, you're right. It sure can be frustrating sometimes.
Yeah. You know, this is interesting listening to this conversation. It makes me think that there's something inherent in the gospel that, I mean, we've used these terms like come in and blow everything up, you know, and at the beginning in your introduction, Daniel, you said that Jesus really did turn the world upside down. And I think that it speaks to what Jesus, well, the text Jesus picked, you know, Jesus picked these texts and they did. It was, it flipped the world upside down for the people that he was speaking to, and they weren't ready for it. They didn't want it. And sometimes, you know, pastors will bring in outside prophets and to kind of drop a big bomb of some kind. And I think that there's something inherently unsettling about the gospel, that the gospel is intended to leave us feeling unsettled. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens with Jesus here. Jesus, the people feel unsettled. And if the gospel isn't making you feel unsettled, you might not be hearing the gospel.
Mm-hmm. I just want to add one more thing to go back, if I could, to what we were just talking about with kind of the outside prophet, is that the thing is, with us as pastors, is that we have to remember, and I think this is a temptation for a lot of pastors, and we see it with a lot of pastors, is to remember that we're not beyond needing a bomb dropped on us from time to time. And then we need to have, and to remember the times that we've had a mentor or a pastoral figure walking us through the remains and putting pieces back together. Because otherwise we get haughty and think we can tell everybody what to do. And that's just not, that's not right as a pastor, nor as a prophet either, I don't think.
Hmm. That's interesting. So Bert, I guess part of our job as pastors may be to model for our congregation those times when Jesus drops those bombs on us, you know, his interaction with the Syrophoenician woman. Is one where I've told my congregation, I don't like the Jesus I see here.
Yeah.
This is troubling, where Jesus says, if you want to be my disciple, anyone who, what is the text? Anyone who doesn't hate mother or father, can be my disciple, or the guy who just wants to bury his father. Yeah. You know, Jesus says, hey, let the dead bury the dead. I think, man, I need to, maybe I can model for the congregation that same shock that the gospel presents with us, and be honest with it, try to learn from it, but certainly not run from it.
Well, part of me wants to talk about verse 21, because I have to wonder if when they got really riled up when he goes, well, today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. Yeah. I mean, that's you kind of want to take him aside and say, well, there's, I understand what you're trying to do here, but there's probably a more diplomatic way to ease into this, right?
Yeah.
you read this passage. I mean, it's a pretty powerful passage. And then it sits down and goes, today it's been fulfilled in your presence.
Yeah, Jesus certainly didn't have preaching one-on-one in seminary.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, David. I mean, I can't help but laugh when I come to this, because, you know, Jesus, on the one hand, is so effective, a preacher. But that's not the way I was taught to preach. No. I mean, we're taught, okay, be self-revelatory, exhibit vulnerability, build trust with your hearers, contextualize your message, of course, for the for your congregation. Bring your hearers along with you. Jesus and I weren't in the same preaching course.
Oh my gosh, this makes me think of another really funny story. I had a lot of bumbles along the way to get to where I am. And I was taking my preaching course in seminary, and there was a substitute that day. And so the person who will remain nameless was in preaching class that day, and I got up to preach my sermon, which happened to be on the Syrophoenician woman, which is one of my most favorite texts in Scripture, and I hope that it comes up in our stuff soon. Anyway, so I was preaching, and I said something particularly shocking in the middle of my sermon, as you know, seminarians are prone to do. And so the guest professor for the day looked at me and said, I don't know what I think about all of your sermon. We'll talk about it later. But that line that you said, the congregation wouldn't hear anything you said after that, because all they could think about would be that line. And that makes me think about what Jesus says here. Jesus says, this line, and they can't hear anything else. They're ready to throw him off the cliff. So, I mean, I'm not comparing myself to Jesus. I'm just saying that I have learned that when you preach, you don't throw those shocking lines in. It's not something that they teach you in seminary, that's for sure. But Jesus didn't need to go to preaching class, I don't suppose.
You know, this may be somewhat blasphemous, but it's almost funny to think about, you know, if you've ever grown up or heard people pray before someone preaches and says, Lord or God, hide them behind the cross so that we don't see them, you know, that we see Jesus. So we don't want to see the person who's preaching. We want to see Jesus. And it's almost like Jesus reads the scripture and then sits down and says, you know, it's me.
It's me.
You don't have to hide me behind anything.
Oh, that's good.
Here it is.
That's good, Bert. Well, and I think that was the point. I mean, I think that brings us back full circle to that's the point Jesus picked these texts because they spoke about his identity, it's what he picked for his first sermon that we hear. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty important. They speak to the very nature of what he understood his ministry to be. Recovery of sight to the blind. Let the oppressed go free.
Yeah, and in the context of Luke's gospel, as you've mentioned with Mary's Magnificat, before that, or I have to read, but you know, John the Baptist's message about lifting up the making the way straight and lifting up the lowly, and so these themes have already, by chapter 4, these type of themes that have been that are familiar from the Hebrew scriptures and the prophets especially, have already made the rounds two or three times by the time Jesus says this specific thing. Again, just echoing again. And then as you read into the Gospels, I mean, it's sort of like all of us, if you're sitting down and reading this like a book or like a story or hearing it told like a story, you get this theme. And then Jesus claims this theme. And then as you see him living out his life, all of a sudden you're seeing the theme in action. And so you can't get away from it. I mean, you just can't get away from it. I mean, it's almost like, you know, the force be with you. I mean, it's just this constant in word, different people, and then in action and in life. It just keeps going.
Well, thanks for this good conversation around what is a really interesting text that gives us a glimpse into how Jesus begins his ministry and the kind of the highlighter he brings to it. And, you know, it's probably the case that this passage that Jesus uses would be just as provocative today as then. These are still words that we need to hear and probably are just as difficult to hear. Well, thank you each for your conversation today, and I look forward to next time.
Thank you, David.
Thanks. Enjoyed it.
Find more information about this podcast, as well as videos and teaching resources for this session at faithelement.net. Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.